You are listening to Words from the Servants, a podcast produced by the Servants of the Word, an international ecumenical brotherhood of men living single for the Lord. You can download this podcast from our website or access it on iTunes or any other podcasting apps. Hello, this is Martin Steinbreitner, and this is another edition of our Servant of the Word podcast. A couple weeks ago, I sat down with Tony Sarkis. He is one of the men who are discerning our life currently, and he's living in the International Formation House in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Tony is originally from Lebanon, and the reason I interviewed him was because of the remarkable story of his father and how his father got imprisoned and then delivered. And we thought this inspiring story would be worth sharing with many of you. I hope you enjoy it. You're Lebanese, but you're in the U.S., so let's start with that. What are you doing here?
I am here to get formed by the Servants of the Word.
So you're something like a novice or something to that?
Yeah. So I'm living in the International Formation House, and I'm in my years of formation currently, so that's why I'm here.
Very good. Give us a bit of background about yourself. Where you grew up, about your family, what you studied.
Sure. So I'm Lebanese, as you mentioned. I grew up in the north of Lebanon, in a village that I think is possibly the smallest village of Lebanon. I think it is.
That is saying a lot.
Yeah, it is the smallest village. So I grew up there. I went to school to a village that's close to my village. I was born to a Christian family, so I grew up in a Christian home. We always went to church. I had that kind of upbringing.
You have one twin sister, is that right?
I have one twin sister.
Okay.
She's much more beautiful than I am.
I was going to point that out if you haven't.
Sorry. Yeah. So I have one twin sister, and that's it. So I grew up in this family, peaceful little village. I studied banking and finance, so I graduated from NDU University, and it's a university in Lebanon, with a degree of business, but I majored in banking and finance. And then after that, I moved to Belfast in the UK.
Because you got connected with the Servants of the Word in some fashion?
Yeah, that is true. Mm-hmm. That is an important fact. So right around my last year of high school, I got connected to the community, and I attended the Life in the Spirit seminar, and so that's where I actually experienced the Lord. So I had a big conversion. So I grew up in a Christian home, but I kind of fell away from my faith growing up, especially in high school. So I was really far from the Lord. Then I met the Lord through the Life in the Spirit seminar, and shortly after that, I started meeting affiliates. And then shortly after that,
Help our audience. What are affiliates?
Affiliates are younger guys who are affiliated with the Servants of the Word.
Okay.
Considering their life. But then after that, I started meeting brothers like our brother Eroni or Q, or even yourself. You were coming to Lebanon, visiting Lebanon. And that was my earliest connections with the brotherhood. And then through programs like Summer Household and things like that, I got to know them a bit more and felt God calling me to consider their life.
Okay. So the reason we're chatting today is because I want to hear a bit more about your dad's story. So
before we get into his story, tell us a little bit about him, what he has done for a living, you know, what kind of man he is, etc. And then we'll go from there.
Yeah, so my dad, what kind of man is he? He's a good man. He used to work for an insurance firm. So he worked abroad and then came back to Lebanon, and he started a business with his brothers for a number of years. And then in the early 2000s, he went back to that country. Mm-hmm. He was working abroad there for an insurance firm again. Mm-hmm. So in 2005, he moved there and he was working mm-hmm. there. So as I mentioned, he was working in this country. It's a, mm-hmm. it's an Arabic country, an Islamic country. Mm-hmm. It's very it's in a country where Christianity isn't welcomed, if you will, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let alone practicing your Christian faith or sharing it. Mm-hmm. And so mainly why he was imprisoned is because he helped a woman, mm-hmm. Who wanted to become a Christian. Mm-hmm. So she was a Muslim and she got in touch with him. Mm-hmm. Because she wanted a Christian person to help her understand who is Jesus and mm-hmm. what is going on, and that's how it all started.
Mm-hmm. So he helped her, and then the government put him into prison for that, or is that what happened essentially?
Not exactly, not the government. Okay. First, but so. If you want, I can just go into the details a little bit of how all this happened.
Yeah.
So, she got in touch with him because she had a dream about Jesus. Mm-hmm. And of course, she knew nothing mm-hmm. about who Jesus is, mm-hmm. what is Christianity, and all these kind of things. So, she got in touch with him mm-hmm. and she shared with him that, and she wanted someone to help her. Mm-hmm. At the same time, she also, and my father didn't know about that, she was also in touch with a priest mm-hmm. and his wife, mm-hmm. a Maronite priest mm-hmm. and his wife, who were also helping her. Mm-hmm. But obviously my father lived where she, and worked where she was, you know, in her country, but mm-hmm. this priest was in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And so she got in touch with him and she asked for help. Mm-hmm. And my father hesitated at the start because he knew that this can, it's forbidden, mm-hmm. it's illegal, but also if you get caught, mm-hmm. there's a very high chance you will be killed, you will be put to death. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have done this before, and they were persecuted and killed, and mm-hmm. we know that. Mm-hmm. And so he hesitated and he doubted her her motivation and what's going on here. But then he decided to help her, and that's a cool story. I can tell you if you want why and how. But then he helped her, and he gave her a Bible, and he helped her and kind of instructed her in the mm-hmm. faith, and all that over the phone or over email, because they're not allowed to see each other in that mm-hmm. country. Mm-hmm. These are the rules. Mm-hmm. And so eventually she made her decision that she wants to leave her country, move to Lebanon, receive Christian education, mm-hmm. and then get baptized. Mm-hmm. And that's what she did. Mm-hmm. My father helped her with these steps. Mm-hmm. So she needed someone to kind of guide her through that and connect her with people in Lebanon.
Yeah.
So other than simply helping her spiritually, if you want, or with her questions and her search for, mm-hmm. for the truth, he also helped her practically. Mm-hmm. She left the country, and her parents were able to know that she was in Lebanon, mm-hmm. that she was in touch with the priests, mm-hmm. and that she was living in a convent. Mm-hmm. And then they were able to track her communications and find out that my dad
was instrumental in
yes and or at least at the start they knew that okay, this guy has been in touch with our daughter for a while, why is that? So they asked him to come and sit for a hearing or interrogations or you know, things like that, and that's where you know they were able to find out what's going on, and eventually they sent him to court, and all these the procedures started, and then he got sentenced after a year of interrogations and going back and forth. He got sentenced to 6 years of jail.
And when did you? I mean, this sounds not sort of matter of fact, but finding that out. I mean, I'm assuming you and the rest of the family were living in Lebanon at that point.
Yeah, we were living in Lebanon, and after a normal school day, it was a Monday, actually, where we became suspicious that my dad hasn't called us for a number of days. And he used to call us every day.
Okay.
Ever since he left in 2005, he called us every day. And that was 2012, actually, 7 years after living and working in that country. So my mom was worried, and she was like, okay, she asked me to do something about it. So I called his friend, or actually his colleague at work, saying, hello, you know, this is weird, but, you know, is there something going on? Is he okay? And that's how we actually found out.
Okay.
And little by little, we started discovering what's going on. Because it was hard to communicate things over the phone.
Right.
And everything was very ambiguous. So his friend didn't want to say, that's what it is or that's what it's not. He just gave us some information. So it took us a few days before we understood, okay, he's in jail for this reason and that reason.
But at that point, he wasn't sentenced yet. You just knew that he was being interrogated, etc.
Yes, but actually, throughout his that year where he was being questioned, he was in jail. He was kept in jail. And partly it's because it was safer for him to be in jail. Because the public were going, you know, the people there were going crazy. They wanted him. They wanted to, you know, hurt him or kill him or whatever. So because they were hearing that this guy is you know, sharing the gospel is, well, at first they said he's baptizing people.
Right.
That was the what they accused him of. But so the police said it's better for you to be in jail. That's what they said, but it wasn't ideal because it wasn't just for safety. They also kept him in, you know, private cells and all kind of stuff were happening.
And did you have any direct contact with him during that time or only via this colleague?
At the start, it was very hard to get in touch with him. And for the first few weeks, we just weren't able to know if he's alive or not. He would just disappear. So and then a few days later he would call us and they said, yeah, they moved me to this like room.
So he would call from time to time.
Yeah, he was able to call us from time to time because I think we were like people were able to visit him. So his friends or sometimes we were able to get in touch with someone who's a, you know, an important person there. So he was able to kind of, you know, go there and say, here, I want to talk to this person. But it was very random. So sometimes it was weeks where we heard nothing from him. So the first few weeks, even months, there was no system.
Right.
And we were living in this kind of... We were living in the unknown. You're like,
certainty,
is he alive? Yeah. Is he not? What's going on? So, yeah, that's how we were communicating with him.
And how did your family deal with that uncertainty? At that point, he wasn't sentenced yet. You didn't know how long he was going to be...
Yeah, that's true. The first, there was a lot of uncertainty and risk involved at the start. And to be honest with you, I remember one day very clearly, I had this conversation with my mom where we were saying they might put him to death, mm-hmm. and we have to expect that. Like, I still remember this day very clearly. We sat down and said,
"Sounds like a difficult conversation."
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's partly because we heard that from a Lebanese politician,
mm-hmm.
who was trying to help us with, you know, the diplomatic
right.
relationships
right.
or
right.
things like that. So we called him and he said, "I'm not going to lie to you, but this is a high, you know, this is a possibility."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. So there was a lot of insecurity, but we were like, okay, you know, this is what it is. And that's what we're dealing with now. Now, it can sound like it was simply us trying to be strong,
mm-hmm.
but actually there was a lot of grace
mm-hmm.
from the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing happened 6 days after I gave my life to Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I have just experienced the Lord and gave my life to Him and experienced
mm-hmm.
the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was vocal about it, and I was trying to give that to my family as well. And so from day one, I knew there's no way we can go through this without God's grace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to rely on the Lord,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to expect Him to provide for us. And He did.
Mm-hmm.
He provided in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Financially,
mm-hmm.
Emotionally, socially,
mm-hmm.
You name it. We experienced a lot of God's grace, of God's provision. The Lord was present to us in these few months in a way that He was never...
Mm-hmm.
present,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm not sure we will ever experience His presence
mm-hmm.
like that again.
Mm-hmm.
There was a special grace mm-hmm. for that special situation. I can't really find the words to describe it.
Was he sentenced and then you knew, okay, he was going to be away that many years? Or was it the whole period unclear how long he was going to be away? Or how did that work once he got sentenced?
Everyone thought that he's going to, you know, it's going to be an easy thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a matter of a few months or a year and he'll
mm-hmm.
be out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I remember early on I was praying one day, and I remember telling my mom, "Look, this might." I actually said this might be 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
I just said that. Now, one can argue that was prophetic sense, but I don't
mm-hmm.
think so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of this year, everyone was shocked
that he was still in prison.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and no, everyone was shocked that it was 6 years. He got sentenced 6 years and 300 lashes.
Mm-hmm.
That was his sentence.
Mm-hmm.
People in the family were very surprised.
Mm-hmm.
People in that country,
mm-hmm.
citizens of the country where he got, you know, accused,
mm-hmm.
Were also shocked, but because they were angry.
Yeah,
they wanted a life sentence, or they wanted him dead or something.
Mm-hmm.
The way we found out about it is it was on the news all over Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't from our lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't from my dad. It was people calling us, asking us if we watched the news this morning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we were like,
wow.
No, we didn't. And then they're like, oh, okay. And then at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
we found out what's going on. So
at that point, you knew he was going to be in prison for 6 years. And at that point, did you have regular contact with him?
Yeah. He was calling us every week or so.
Okay.
He was trying to call us every week.
Mm-hmm. And how did he hold up? I mean, it must have been difficult to be in prison for 6 years.
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. it really was. Mm-hmm. Well, I asked him when he first came out and we spent time together. I had some conversations with him. He also happened to experience a new conversion
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
throughout this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's helpful to say at this before I say how he managed to spend these 6 years that he didn't want to do this at the start.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to help this woman.
Mm-hmm.
He was very doubtful and he knew it's okay, this might cost me my job,
mm-hmm.
my family, even my life.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do with this?
Mm-hmm.
And then he told her, think about it, and he told her, this is what it's going to cost you if you mm-hmm. want to become a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
You come from this country, from this family.
Mm-hmm.
This is the risk.
Mm-hmm.
You might get killed, but even if you survive,
mm-hmm.
forget about your country, forget about your family, you have to leave all this behind. She came back to him and said, that's what I want.
Right.
He was worried a lot at this point. He was very anxious. He was, you know, sleepless nights, thinking about it, trying to calculate the cost. What's mm-hmm. going on here? What do I do? What's the right thing to do? Do I help her or not?
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that two verses from the Bible came to him, to his mind, while he was thinking and praying about this. One of them was, whoever denies me before man, I will deny before my father.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the other one was, he who loves father or mother or sister or son or land or family more than me
mm-hmm.
does not deserve me.
Mm-hmm.
And these two truths or these two, you know, Bible verses really compelled him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do this and I'm going to put my trust in God. So that's how he first made his decision
mm-hmm.
after having thought about what it might cost him.
Okay.
He still tried to do it secretly as much
right.
as he could.
Right.
But at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was exposed. So he went to jail and he says that the first year was very difficult. And he told me that they used to take him to court. And he said, it was this experience of, like, I was treated like a dog.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in chains.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's mocking me. Everyone hates me because they know why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone. Mm-hmm. And he said that he experienced a lot of distress
mm-hmm.
and a lot of just weakness and pain, physically, emotionally, mentally. Mm-hmm. It was just so overwhelming. Yet, he said, every time I walked into the court to stand before the judge and, mm-hmm. you know, everyone there, he said, the time I walk in, every single time, this boldness
mm-hmm.
came upon me, you know, this mm-hmm. courage,
mm-hmm.
this strength. I looked them in the eyes. I didn't deny anything.
Mm-hmm.
I answered all the questions.
Mm-hmm.
I said the truth. I stood for what I did and for what I believe in.
So he experienced clearly some grace especially when he was interrogated again.
Yeah, so that's one striking thing, because he told me right before I go in and after I go out,
mm-hmm.
I'm not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And before I go in, I always was worried about what am I going to say?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to trick me into something. They're going to do something mm-hmm. to me. And he has no idea what to say.
Mm-hmm.
But then he walks in and the Lord gave him what to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the sentence, something changed for him. So the first year was very difficult. After he got sentenced, he said that, he told me, okay, I had to say, I have these years in jail.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to approach this?
Mm-hmm.
So that was his part. And then he told me a lot of stories, how much the Lord gave him grace. And the way he was able to come to know the Lord in a new way,
mm-hmm.
and in a deeper way. One of the things he says, for example, he said, for a number of years before this incident, I felt like I was living life kind of aimlessly. I was away from my family, trying to provide for them, and saying, okay, this is my duty, I just have to, you know, earn money, send it to my family, and that's it. I was experiencing some kind of, you know, despair, or some kind of, there was no joy in his life. And one of the things that happened when he was in jail is the Lord gave him a new joy that he's been searching for a long time. So that's one thing he experienced. Another thing was a certain closeness to God that he never had.
Right.
I mean, these are his words.
Right.
He doesn't deny that it was hard.
Yeah.
But he also says that once I kind of said, okay, this is what it is, I'm going to look to the Lord and he's going to sustain me through these years. The Lord did.
And how did your mom hold up?
My mom is a courageous woman. She, you know, so we lost our income, our main income. My mom works as a school teacher, but my dad was the person who, you know, he had the main income. So we lost that when he went to jail. So here she was in her 40s, early 40s, and she was working full time, trying to look after us, trying to live life without her husband, without his support in different areas, kind of leading the family in his absence. So that was very difficult for her. But she is also a woman of faith, and she was able to go through this in faith, relying on the Lord, waiting for the Lord. Not that it wasn't painful, not that it wasn't difficult for her, but she clearly made it through, and, you know, relying on the Lord and waiting for him, relying on his provision, and, surrounded by family, surrounded by friends, by a lot of community people, even servants of the word. Servants of the word never failed to support us in many ways. When they visited Lebanon, almost every time they visited, one of them visited, they would make a trip. They were, you know, same for the community, the people of God community. So the Lord provided for us and for my mom in many ways.
Now, there's one particular story, if my memory serves me correctly. You actually moved to Belfast while your dad was still in prison.
Yeah.
At least from the outside, that seems like a crazy decision to leave your mom alone. How did that come about? And did you talk to your dad about that at all?
Yeah, I did. When I wanted to move to Belfast, the brothers told me, we normally don't do that, but unless both your parents are happy with your decision, and unless you have the blessings of your mom and your dad, we're sorry, we're not allowing you to join us.
Understandably.
So I shared this with my mom and my dad, and I must confess, my mom was a little bit happy to hear that. She thought, like, oh, you know,
he's not gonna go.
Yeah. I talked to my mom, and I talked to my dad. The first time I called my dad, I told him, here's the story. And I've been telling him for a while, you know, I'm thinking about this brotherhood. I'm thinking God might be calling me to consider this. So he knew a little bit about it. But then I was graduating and it got serious. And I'm like, you know, I'm doing this. I'm turning down job offers. I'm sacrificing a few things. I'm going to be away from my mom and my sister. I'm just telling you, this is what it entails. Mm-hmm. What do you think? He didn't think it was a good idea at the start. Mm-hmm. He said, well, why don't you stay here? Take this job offer, stay with your mom, mm-hmm. and serve God in Lebanon mm-hmm. while you work and do this mm-hmm. you know, what I'm telling you. I explained to him why I think I should do what I did. And again, the conversation ended with him telling me, I don't think that's a good idea.
Okay.
Of course, this meant to me that I'm not moving to Belfast anymore. I have to forget about this. But I spent 2 weeks in prayer. And I asked some of my friends and brothers to pray as well. Mm-hmm. And he called us 2 weeks later. And, yeah, and he brought up the subject. Mm-hmm. He said, I've been thinking about this ever since we had our phone call. And you know what? I think you should do it if that's what God's calling you to do.
Wow.
He said, do not let anyone or anything stand in your way if that's what God wants you to do.
Wow.
God will provide for us. God will provide for your mom. God will be with us. If this is really what God's calling you to, then we're all part of it, you know.
Okay. Wow.
So he said this, and then I started telling him, yeah, but I've been thinking about it. And I wanted to tell him I've been thinking about it too. So I shared some challenges with him. And then he said, okay, you just have some courage and do it. And then my mom also told me, look, if this is God's plan for your life, if this is His call on your life, mm-hmm. who am I to stand in His way? Of course, I will miss you. I will need you. Mm-hmm. But if God is calling you to do this, you go ahead and do it. To have my parents by my side in that way.
And so then, while you were in Belfast, your dad was freed?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So I was there. He was freed almost at the end of my second year in Belfast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was May 2018.
Okay. And so I'm assuming you flew back to see him?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. I did. It was all a bit funny because we weren't sure he's going to get released on time. Mm-hmm. I mean, we weren't sure he's going to get released at all, mm-hmm. let alone being released on time. Mm-hmm. But then the brothers and I said, okay, mm-hmm. if we think he's going to be released on the 25th or 26th of May, mm-hmm. that's the date that he was supposed to have his, you know, to be released. Let's just book your flights in faith.
Okay.
And just mm-hmm. let's do it. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. Even though there was a real chance that he wasn't going to be released. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I was in London, Heathrow Airport, waiting for my flight to Lebanon. It was Thursday, 24th of May. And my mom texted me saying, your dad received his passport and his ticket and he's flying home on Saturday morning.
Wow.
So that was all very exciting. Mm-hmm. And it was great. So I went home a day earlier and yeah, he was released on the 26th of May. We drove to the airport and it was a very intense,
wow,
emotional moment.
And so now he's home and he's safe. All is good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's been home for the last year and a half and mm-hmm. Getting adapted to his new lifestyle and to free life.
Wow. That's a great story. Thank you so much for taking the time to tell it and be assured of our prayers for you as you discern your next steps, but obviously also for mom and dad and your beautiful sister.
This podcast was produced by the Servants of the Word, a brotherhood of celibate men that is part of the Sword of the Spirit, an international ecumenical network of covenant communities. For similar and other content, visit us on www.servantsoftheword.org. If you liked what you listened to, please leave us a review on iTunes.